pueden enterarse, thank you, enterarse en nuestro podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. Hi, Craig. How are you?
Hi, Reza. I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Ready for another podcast?
I am indeed. If you're new to this podcast, si estás escuchando por la primera vez, welcome. Bienvenido. En este podcast, Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig, intentamos mejorar tu gramática, vocabulario, pronunciación del inglés. So, welcome. Feedback. Reza, we have an email from Juan Carlos de Málaga, which I hope you can help me with, because I'm not too sure exactly what Juan Carlos means. So listen to this. Mm-hmm. ¿Por qué en la frase, estos son vuestros vaqueros, no se traduce como, are these your jeans? En un ejercicio de la mención del inglés, mencioninglés.com, curso básico, se pone antes la palabra are, que la de these, porque sería, son estos vuestros vaqueros. Explícamelo, porque el intercambio de palabras no me aclaro.
I'm not sure I understand, but...
Yeah, that's what because if you say in Spanish, estos son vuestros vaqueros, in English it's, these are your jeans.
Right.
It's a direct translation.
Mm-hmm.
And when you make the question form, are these your...
Put the verb to be first, change the order.
Exactly. So the order changes, obviously, when you ask the question, these are your jeans, changes to, are these your jeans?
Yeah.
Which, that's important to know, because it's not enough to make the intonation go up and not change the order. It's not correct to say, these are your jeans, as if it's a question. You have to change the verb with the subject. So, are these your jeans? And the voice goes up. So I'm not quite sure what Juan Carlos is asking.
And of course, there has to be a question mark as well at the end.
That's right.
Perhaps there's a missing question mark or something. If you forget to write the question mark, la interrogación, that could be a little bit confusing, I guess.
Well, he says, supone antes la palabra are.
Then it's a question. If it begins with the verb to be, it must be a question.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I hope we've explained that. If Juan Carlos, if you think we haven't understood properly, please send us another email. Explain again what problem you're having with the structure of that phrase, with the order of the words. But once again, estos son vuestros vaqueros. These are your jeans. The question, are these your jeans? Just change the order. Reza, what do you have for us this week in our grammar section?
Well, I thought I'd talk about a few very important words. The words although, or though, even though, in spite of, and despite.
They're very often confused, aren't they? Partly because of the meaning, partly because of the grammar.
Yeah, well, the meaning is basically the same, more or less.
Okay.
It's the grammar we have to worry about.
Hmm.
Let me give you a few example sentences. Although I'm just a poor English teacher, I'm happy. We could divide that sentence into two parts. The first part is, although I'm just a poor English teacher. And the second part is, I'm happy.
So the translation to Spanish of although is aunque.
Aunque soy simplemente un pobre profesor de inglés. Estoy feliz. I'm happy.
I'm happy.
I said, although I'm just a poor English teacher, I'm happy. I could just say, though. Although, or though, with A-L at the beginning or not, the meaning is the same. Although, though. Except I would say that though is more informal than although.
That's true.
A little bit more informal. But the meaning is the same.
And it usually goes at the beginning of the phrase.
Yes. Another variation is I could say even though. That's two words. Even though I'm just a poor English teacher, I'm happy. Even though means the same as although or though. It's just a little more emphatic. Damas emphasis. To highlight the contrast. Because there's two contrasting ideas here. I'm poor, which is a bad thing. But I'm happy. That's a good thing. But so, they both go together. There's a contrast. That's when we use although, though, or even though. To contrast two ideas.
I see. So I could say, even though I'm hungry, I'm going to wait for my dinner.
Yes, you could.
Mm-hmm. And the grammar's the same with those three. Though, even though, although.
Nearly, nearly, nearly. Here's the tricky bit now. I would recommend that listeners have a look at the show notes to see this written.
Okay.
You can begin a sentence with although, or though, or even though. Or you can put although, or even though in the middle of a sentence.
Can you give an example of that?
Yeah, we'll go back to the example I've just given. So, although I'm just a poor English teacher, comma, I'm happy, full stop. Could be written the other way. I'm happy, comma, although I'm just a poor English teacher. So I can reverse the order. Instead of write AB, then BA. So I can begin with although, or even though. And then A, then followed by B. Or I can begin with B, I'm happy. And then put although, though, or even though in the middle. And then A.
So it's the same thing that we were speaking about last episode with the if conditionals. You could change the if clause to have it at the beginning or at the end.
Exactly.
The same idea.
Exactly. Now, another possibility is with the word though, but only the word though, you can have two sentences. So what about this? I'm just a poor English teacher. Full stop. I'm happy though.
Mm-hmm.
Two sentences. And it's best if you put a comma before though. So I'll say it again. I'm just a poor English teacher, full stop. I'm happy, comma, though.
I see. And you can't use although and even though in the same way at the end of the phrase.
That's right. At the end of the sentence, yes. The words although and even though cannot be the last words in the sentence. But though can be the last word in the sentence. Only though, not the other ones. So that's one difference. Also, it's a bit more informal to do it that way. When you put though at the end of a second sentence, I'm just a poor English teacher, full stop. I'm happy, comma, though. That's the most informal way of doing it as well.
So I could say, for example, I've never been to Disneyland. I hope to go one day, though.
Exactly. Means exactly the same as although I've never been to Disneyland, I hope to go one day. Mm-hmm. Means exactly the same. You put though at the end.
That's clear.
Okay, so just be careful with the sentence structure. We'll write this in the show notes.
And you can find the show notes. As well as the show notes, you can
Sean
also...
Sean Connery?
You can also find the show notes at inglespodcast.com. Inglespodcast.com. You can find our show notes. So go there if you want to see the examples, Reza's examples, written down.
Okay. Now, Moneypenny, thank you very much. I will continue.
You're welcome, Mr. Bond.
I will continue now to compare though or although or even though with in spite of or despite. Now, the meaning is essentially the same.
Are they in opuesto? Are they ideas that are opposite to each other?
They're not exactly opposite necessarily. There's a contrast. They seem to contradict each other.
Despite
I'm poor,
the weather.
So being poor normally makes you unhappy, normally. But if I say to you, I'm a poor English teacher, I'm happy though. Oh, well, that's a surprise that I'm happy, because if I'm poor, you expect me to be sad. But no, I'm happy. So the two ideas are not opposite, but they contrast each other. They seem to contradict each other. But here's the difference. Did you notice that in my earlier examples, I said, I am just a poor English teacher. I use the subject I and the verb to be am. Although I'm just a poor English teacher, I'm happy. You must use a clause with though although, and even though. A clause, if you don't know, listeners, is a part of a sentence with a subject and a verb. I am, for example. Although I am, just a poor English teacher. Now, with in spite of and despite, you don't use a clause.
That's right. You can use a noun. You could say, despite the weather, I went to the beach.
Yep.
But you can't say, although the weather. You have to say, although the weather was bad. You need a verb in there.
Exactly. You must have a subject and verb with though, although, and though. But with in spite of and despite, you cannot have a subject and verb. You can have a noun, or you can have a pronoun, like it, him, her. Or you can have an ing. For example, I could say, in spite of being a poor English teacher, I'm happy. So I have the verb be, but it's not subject verb, not I am. It's not a subject verb, I am. It's the ing being, B-E-I-N-G. That's possible with in spite of. Because really, the ing form of the verb is like a noun.
Yeah.
It's treated the same as a noun. The gerund, the ing, is treated like a noun. So we could say, in spite of being a poor English teacher, or despite being a poor English teacher, I'm happy. Notice another typical mistake. We say in spite of, but we don't use of with despite. It's just despite. But it's in spite of.
So going back to this idea of using a gerund after despite or in spite of, with my example of the weather and going to the beach, or I could say, despite having bad weather, we went to the beach. Or in spite of having bad weather, we had a picnic.
That's fine, because if you're using having the ing form, you can do it.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, just like with even though, and although, you can reverse the order. So I can say instead of saying, in spite of being a poor English teacher, I'm happy, I can say, I'm happy in spite of being a poor English teacher. So instead of AB, BA order.
And just to clarify, when you say poor English teacher, you mean without money. You don't mean a bad one.
Yes, that's
you
what
don't
I mean.
Mean. Poor English, like, not
some
good.
Of the listeners might disagree, but that's what I mean.
You don't mean I'm a poor English teacher.
I am as well, but that's another story.
Sorry to derail you there.
Craig, could you say this sentence in another way? I'm going to tell you the first word. Here's the sentence. Though it was raining, we went for a walk. I want you to begin with the word despite.
Despite the rain.
Right.
So I'd use the noun. Despite the rain, we went for a walk.
Right. So though it was raining, it's a verb, isn't it? What form of the verb is that? It was raining.
Past continuous.
Yeah, so don't be confused because it's ing, raining. Yeah, it's ing, but it's not gerund. It's the past continuous. It was raining. Yeah, it was raining is a subject and a verb. Yeah. It's not just ing.
Right.
Because sometimes we use the ing to form a verb form, like the past continuous. And then you said, despite the rain, we went for a walk. So despite, you cannot say despite plus it was raining. No.
No.
Because that would be past continuous. No. Or, by the way, let me go back again and add the punctuation. Despite the rain, comma, we went for a walk. Full stop. One sentence. I could do it in two sentences, though. I could say, it was raining. Full stop. Despite this, comma, we went for a walk. It's very typical to add this. Or I could say, it was raining. Full stop. In spite of this, comma, we went for a walk. So, very often, instead of one sentence with a comma, we have two sentences, and you add the word this, despite this, or the word that, despite that, or in spite of this, in spite of that.
And it's very common also, isn't it, to say the fact that.
Yeah, exactly. It was raining, full stop. Despite that fact, comma, we went for a walk.
Or despite the fact that it was raining, we went for a walk.
Exactly, another way.
In spite of the fact that it was bad weather, we had the picnic.
Aha. And that was the last thing I was going to say. You took the words right out of my mouth. They were on the tip of my tongue. So there is an occasion when you can have a subject and verb with despite of and despite if you precede it with the words, the fact.
The fact.
Despite the fact that I am poor, I'm happy. So I am, it's a subject verb. And I said, you don't have a subject and verb with despite or in spite of. But you do if you add the words, the fact that. Yeah. Despite the fact that I'm a poor English teacher, I'm happy.
It's a very common mistake in writing of students that have first certificate level, intermediate level, that they make these mistakes with these conjunctions.
Mm-hmm. Another typical writing mistake is be careful with your punctuation. If you're going to just use one sentence, put a comma in the middle. Despite or in spite of blah, 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 comma, continue.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're going to say despite this or despite that, you need two sentences. So it was raining, full stop. New sentence. Despite this, comma, we went for a walk.
Right.
Be careful with your punctuation, your sentence structure.
And it makes sense because the two ideas are opuestos. They're very contra. They're not in agreement with each other. The weather was bad, aunque the weather was bad, in spite of the bad weather, etc. So you do need that comma, you do need that separation between the clauses.
Although is often translated as aunque, what is the normal translation for despite or in spite of?
A pesar de.
Yeah, because a pesar de, just like despite, is followed by nouns or ings. Yeah,
right.
That's the best translation. Okay, Craig, that's all the grammar.
Thank you back very much. You. Thank you very much, Reza. Moving on to our vocabulary corner this week, I thought we'd look at some more work vocabulary, el vocabulario conectado al mundo de trabajo. Now, we have spoken about work before in our vocabulary section. If you go back to...
What number was it?
AIRC9.
Number 9, okay.
Aprender inglés con Reza y Craig 9. And the link to that episode will be in the show notes for this episode, episode 32. We spoke about words common to work, like the difference between job and work, career, as a false friend. It's not commonly used as carrera. To get the sack, to get fired, desperdirse, to hand in your notice, to be made redundant, to get redundancy money, finiquito, to retire and get a pension, jubilarse. So to revise that vocabulary, go back to episode 9. But this episode, I have some words connected to work, and I'm hoping, Reza, you could tell me the difference between, for example, part-time and full-time work.
In Spanish or an explanation?
As you wish.
I think in Spanish, full-time is to work a tiempo completo, I think.
Yes,
and part-time
right.
is a tiempo parcial.
Parcial.
Yeah. More hours is full-time. So full-time, it's probably your only job. Mm-hmm. It occupies most of your working life. Whereas if a job is part-time, you may have another job. Or you may spend many hours doing other things.
Yeah, part-time could be just working in the mornings or just working in the afternoons. So if you imagine that a regular full-time job would be, 40 hours a week, 45 hours a week? Then part-time would be perhaps 15 to 20.
Mm-hmm.
So I consider myself a part-time teacher.
Yeah, me too, I guess, yeah. Mm. One important thing is people often confuse part-time and full-time with temporary and permanent. They're not the same.
Oh, no.
They're not the same. You can have a permanent contract. That means your contract is, if you don't do anything
fijo.
Wrong, forever. Mm. Fijo. Or you can have a temporary contract, which means on a certain date, your contract is finished
mm-hmm.
and you no longer work for that company unless they give you a new contract. But that's nothing to do with part-time and full-time.
That's right.
It's fijo or
temporal. Exactly.
You can be a full-time on a temporary contract or full-time on a permanent contract. And you can be part-time on a permanent contract and
yeah.
part-time on a temporary contract.
We've been part-time for years at the British Council, haven't we?
Yeah.
Working a few hours a week.
On a permanent contract.
On a permanent basis.
Yeah.
What about the difference, Reza, between qualifications and experience, which are two words that are often spoken about in job applications
Qualifications are the official certificates, diplomas, exams that you've passed, and therefore you probably have a piece of paper or some type of notification certificate that you have a certain level in a language, in a skill, in a subject at school.
What are your qualifications? Do you have any teaching or music qualifications?
Well, I did a degree, and then after my degree, I did a course which was called Postgraduate Diploma in the Teaching of English as a Foreign Language.
Ooh, I see.
TEFL.
Very, very grand. Very so impressive.
It was a postgraduate teaching course. It was 9 months full time. So it was kind of similar to a PGCE, but not quite the same. A PGCE is a postgraduate certificate in education, which is or used to be the typical qualification that a teacher was required to have if they wanted to teach in a British state school. So I did something similar, but specifically for TEFL, teaching English as a foreign language.
Which gives you the qualification to teach abroad. Yeah, that's not extranjero.
Well, teach abroad or teach in the UK, but teach foreigners.
Teach foreigners as students of a foreign language.
These days, there's a very common qualification called the Delta. Have you heard of that?
Yes, I have. It used to be called DTEFLA.
Yeah, that's the common qualification people do now. I can't remember what it stands for. Diploma in English language teaching of adults or something like that?
No idea. I couldn't tell you. But it's a teaching qualification that lets you teach English to speakers of a foreign language.
When I did my qualification, Delta didn't exist, so...
No, it didn't for me either. A long time ago. On the subject of work also, the difference between CV and resume is one of...
British and American English.
Exactly. Which one's British?
CV.
CV. So your CV is your... curriculum, like they say in Spanish. Your curriculum vitae, your CV, it's very often abbreviated to CV, whereas our American cousins tend to use the word resume, taken from the French.
And also they look a bit different. I'm not entirely familiar with American resumes, but the type of information they put is slightly different, you know.
I didn't know
that. The style and the format are slightly different.
Well, it's something that's...
American resumes are traditionally more informal than British CVs. They're
right.
More personal and more informal, and you're expected to be a bit more... to open up a bit more about yourself, as is typical in American culture, to be more informal and more personal.
Yeah, it's something that in my experience is constantly changing, the way you present yourself to get an interview for a job. In fact, I've noticed recently, especially with American applicants, that there's very often a video, a personal video made by the applicant, the person asking for the job, showing their face, showing the way they present themselves, the way they speak, speaking about their experience and their qualifications in a video, which is something that is becoming more common. Promotion and prospects.
A promotion is a specific change in your position in the company to a higher position. For example, you were assistant director and now you have been promoted to director.
An expression that springs to mind is to climb the ladder, subir las escaleras,
yes.
To climb the career ladder,
yeah,
subir arriba.
So what about prospects then? How would you define them?
I would say your prospects are the possible advantages you have in the future for a particular job or position, the possibilities of advancement, where you could be in 2 or 5 or 10 years from now. If you join a company that's very forward-thinking, then maybe the company has good prospects for you, that you will not be doing the same thing for the next 5 years, that if you prove yourself, if you're a good, competent, talented employee, then you will climb the ladder. You'll get promoted, you will increase your salary, and you will be more successful in the company.
Of course, sadly, these days in Spain and in other places, we're talking about July 2014, all too often you come across people who have no job at all.
That's right, yeah.
Especially young people. About more than 50% of young people do not have a job in Spain.
It's very sad.
How could we describe them?
Well, you could say that they are unemployed. You can say that they are out of work. And in a very British expression is on the dole, D-O-L-E, on the dole. But in...
En el paro.
En el paro, exactly. I'm on the dole, or I'm claiming dole, which is claiming assistance from the government, claiming, asking for social security. But these three expressions, to be, I'm unemployed, I'm out of work, I'm on the dole, tend to have a negative, almost depressing feel about them. I suggest if you are asked this question, especially in a job interview, say you are between jobs, which means you've finished a job, at the moment you're not working, but very soon you will be working again. So if you're between jobs, it does sound a little more positive, a little more optimistic. And finally, timetable and hours.
Well, I suppose timetable is when exactly you work.
Well, think of Spanglish. When, what mistakes do Spanish speakers make confusing timetable when they're asked about work? Don't you often find that some students would say, my timetable, my work timetable is from 9 to 5?
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Timetable.
That's not timetable. That's hours.
It's hours. Yeah. Exactly. I don't know what the translation is to Spanish, but for some reason, timetable is often confused with the hours you work. I think timetable in English is more for transport, for trains, for buses, etc., and for schools and university, your study timetable,
exactly,
the hours of class. When you're working, you'd speak more about your hours.
With one exception, though, which happens to be us. Teachers do speak of timetables, though.
Yes, because we're teaching classes.
Study.
Yeah, because it goes back to study again and education.
But apart from teachers, most workers speak of their hours, not their timetable.
Businesses, you would phone up, perhaps, and speak to shop and say, what are your hours?
Yeah.
And they'd say, well, we're open from 9 to 5, for example. What hours do you work? I work long hours. So remember, timetables for transport, buses and trains,
and
for schools and study and teachers, and hours for work and employment and businesses.
Right.
Finally this week, Reza, idioms. Over to you.
Well, I'm still a bit obsessed with animals. You remember the bee's knees, etc., from last week?
Yeah.
Lo más guay and lo mejor de todos. What about a dog's dinner or a dog's breakfast? Ever heard that one?
I have, but I'm not too sure how would you use it.
Well, to me it means a mess, something badly organized. In Spanish, hecho un desastre.
A dog's breakfast.
Or dinner. Some
or
people say
dinner.
Breakfast, some people say dinner.
Can you put it in a sentence?
Yeah. For example, the government's new health reforms have been a disaster. Hospitals are chaos. The plans are a dog's dinner. Hecho un desastre. They're a dog's breakfast.
Okay.
There's chaos. El caos. Dog's dinner.
That's the opposite of the one we had last week with the dog's bollocks.
Yes. Dog's bollocks, a positive thing.
Yeah.
Strangely enough. But a dog's dinner, which sounds good, is actually a negative thing. Because I imagine dogs make a mess when they're eating their dinner.
Okay.
Any more from you?
Well, yeah, there's one I really like. It's not over until the fat lady sings, which means you never know how something's going to end or finish until the final minute. It's often used in sport. For example, if you're watching a game of football and one team is winning 1-0 or 1-0, you'd say, yeah, they're going to win. It's obviously going to... Well, wait a minute. It's not over until the fat lady sings. And I checked this on the internet. It's originally from a Southern American saying from fat ladies in a church choir. Church ain't over till the fat lady sings. And another possible explanation from an opera aria. Because fat ladies often sing opera. So when the fat lady comes out to deliver her final aria, her final, the ending of the opera, that's when the opera's finished. So it's not over until the fat lady sings. Quite like that one.
I've got another one for you. I'm afraid I seem to be dwelling on rather negative ones. We've had pain in the neck, pain in the arse recently, pesado. And for this week, I've got scum of the earth.
Oh.
Scum of the earth. Scum, that's S-C-U-M. The worst, the most immoral, just lo peor horrible. De peor. Lo peor de lo peor. La escoria de la sociedad. A word you hear in Spain, but I'm not sure, but in South America, you hear chusma.
Chusma? I haven't chusma. Heard that. What is that?
That's scum.
Disgusting.
Es mala gente, es chusma.
Is it only about people? Is it only used for people?
I think so, yeah. I think so. What scum actually is, if you are boiling something, imagine you're making some chicken soup, as I often do, and you put the chicken in the water to boil.
And you get the caldo.
But at the top, when it's boiling, at the beginning, you will get a horrible...
The grease.
Liquid, the grease from the chicken.
I hate
it comes
that.
To the top. You should throw that away.
That is
the scum.
That's the scum.
Yeah, so this esta capa de grasa y cosas desagradables, that is the scum. So the scum of the earth. Imagine if you're the scum of the earth, chusma. La escoria de la sociedad.
It's quite an insult, isn't it? If you say to somebody, you're the scum of the earth. Is that mal visto?
Oh, yes, yeah. It's a side type thing, for example, people might say, pedophiles, for example.
They're the
Many
scum
people
of the
think
earth.
Pedophiles are the scum of the earth.
Yes, they are.
Chusma, la escoria de la sociedad. Okay.
Here's one for you. Give him an inch and he'll take a mile.
Oh, yes, that's a classic.
Give him an inch and he'll take a mile. Les da uno la mano y se toman hasta el codo.
Yeah.
For example, if you're generous to someone, the person will demand even more. Someone who takes advantage of you, if you're even a little kind to him or her. For example, if you let Mark borrow your tools for this weekend, he'll keep them for years. Give him an inch and he'll take a mile. He'll take liberties.
Craig, in your life, has anybody ever taken advantage of you in that way? Have you ever given an inch?
Yes, but only once.
What happened? What happened?
Well, once I've given them an inch and they've taken a mile, then I don't give them any more inches. Uh-huh. Once bitten.
Twice shy.
There's another one. There's another
once
one.
Bitten, twice shy. That means something bad happens to you once, but it won't happen again.
It won't happen again.
Because you'll be ready for it the next time.
You learn from your mistakes.
Mm-hmm. I've got one more for you. The expression to let your hair down as an idiomatic expression. It can have a physical meaning. You've got long hair, you let it down, so it's over your shoulders. But the idiomatic meaning means relax. Forget about formality. Be informal.
Tranquil, man.
Dejarse relajar.
Chill out.
Chill out. Let your hair down.
Relájate.
For example, come on, you've been working hard all day. Let your hair down tonight. Go out, have a drink.
Example, if you go to a party and somebody's obviously not enjoying themselves, they're very quiet, they're very conservative, and you'd say, let your hair down, enjoy yourself, have a drink, have a dance, relax, have fun. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's all my idioms for this week. What about you?
That's all my idioms for this episode. So I think we'll wrap it up.
Okie dokie.
Thank you to everybody for listening to us. Thank you to Reza for being here. And we'll see you all in the next episode. Remember, if you have a comment or a question for either of us or both of us, send us an email or a sound file, un mensaje de voz en MP3, with a comment or question, and send your emails and sounds to Craig, C-R-A-I-G, craig@inglespodcast.com or to Reza at belfastreza@gmail.com. Y también no olvidéis, por favor, darnos estrellas y una reseña en iTunes para que más gente pueda enterarse nuestro podcast. Thank you for listening, and it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later, licensed by Creative Commons under a by NC license at ccmixter.org.